Good evening. Tonight is August 13, 2017. Tonight we're gathered here at the Rosenkreutz Institute, Ramona, California, for this lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination. Modern man today has built his knowledge, his soul, his thinking upon that age which we call enlightenment. And previous to that age, we had an age of alchemy and the Renaissance. Science, in how it came into our modern world, was part of philosophy, was called philosophy of nature. That was what our natural science was. And because this was something new for mankind to understand, to be able to have just the beginnings in his mind, in his thoughts, of the theories that today are so prevalent and spread out through our culture. Just about everybody knows that water is H2O, and they know that the sun is more stable than the earth, in the sense that the earth goes around the sun. And because of these, because of the effects of knowledge through time, men have grown accustomed to something that 500 years ago, or even 100 years ago, for many, many, many people, was still an enigma. And that is how to understand nature. And I can give you a very good picture of how difficult it is when you don't know something. So all of you, since you're not musicians and you've never gone to a music school as I have, and if I tell you that here we can record, or I can write down the notes, or I can tell you what tone you're singing, and you ask me, how do you do that? How do you pick out a tone from all the sound and say that's a C or a D or an E? Why can't the C be a G, or a G be something else? How come it has to be a G or a C? And these are really valid questions when you don't know. They seem to be so important. But when you know how a musician can understand and abstract from the sound the formulas in order for him to know what the tone is. Not just to have an instrument that says this is a G or a D, like a tuner, but to really be able to figure out exactly how that tone can be understood. And then to create structure around it so that we can say, here's a chord. Now, all of this, I know, is something beyond what you're accustomed to know as knowledge. But what I want to point out is how easy it is for those that know as opposed to those that don't know. And so when we think of chemistry with all of its structures, it is exactly the same thing. How does a scientist know here we have an element? And the thought that is in the musician's mind when he sees a note, something of a tone, and he says this is an A tone, and then he's inspired to pick up a saxophone or a flute or a guitar and to accompany it. And so it is here that we begin to see that there is an activity that comes from our knowledge. And so human beings, through knowledge, actually enter on a path of activity as well. So the knowledge that I'm giving to you tonight is not just about enlightenment. And it's not just about illumination. It's about the activity. If we were 200 years ago, we would be talking about what we are. We are people of a certain mind. And in that age, 200 years ago, the age of enlightenment, we didn't know we were in the age of enlightenment. 100 years had to go by, and then people said, these people were enlightened. The people in the Renaissance, they didn't know they were in the Renaissance. They wanted to be different. They felt the spirit to move them in their hearts to music, into a special form of music. And this was really clear that the Renaissance was powered by consciousness, by philosophy, by that which grips the human soul and says, here's knowledge. This is knowledge about you. What are you going to do with it? So many people today don't realize yet that this is an age of enlightenment, again, another one. And this enlightenment is founded upon our school here. Now, you can't probably believe in your hearts that a small, little, simple thing can grow to be so big. If you look into the age of the Renaissance, the people of the Renaissance can trace the whole impulse of the Renaissance to a small, small group of people, a school called the Camerata. Yes, it is, my dear friends, that when the soul is gripped and it's excited, this is really a big thing. One simple little discovery that gives insight to other human beings is actually a big thing. Because to really, truly move a human soul is something of an art. When we go to college, we go there because we want to get that job. Very few people are in the college to actually learn the material and to love that material that they're learning. To love knowledge leads us to the question of what kind of knowledge. And if we're seduced by knowledge, you can imagine now why people have a fear of knowledge, because knowledge is so powerful. And so the seductive part of knowledge is really what is mostly presented in the world. Knowledge is presented in a seductive way. Pure knowledge that you can learn from and then select from it. I want to apply this here for my life. Now, when we think of music, it's really very pure because the student realizes that he learns only 7 notes or 12 chromatic notes. That means another scale, these two forms of groupings of the notes. If you don't know what that means, it's a grouping. Notes that are in a particular group. And so it is that from this set, we have a system. And from that system, we can make a song. And our own song with our own name on it. And if you don't believe me, go sing a song to a musician. And soon enough, he'll have the little notes written down. And you'll say, gee, I sang a G. Or gee, I sang a C or a D. Yeah, that's what you sang. Those were the tones that you sang. And you say, how do you know that? Well, then it's a path of learning to discover exactly what you did. This is the footprints, the carbon footprints that science talks about. We leave a footprint behind us in everything that we do. In every breath that you take, in every thought that you think, leaves a footprint. Now, many of you don't think thoughts of any validity, of any meaning at all. In fact, most of thoughts of just about every human being, even the greatest human being, is something of a torment. Because something has to fill our time. And we want to think to ourselves, well, I would like to do this perfectly. And I would like to do this accurately, or I would like to do it according to a certain system, but nobody's giving me a script. Nobody's telling me what I need to do. That's why we teach you. That's why I present to you about the spirit. It's the hardest thing in the world for a man to walk out freely to the Spirit and then get the impulse from the Spirit. And men are very suspicious of it. That's why they are in the university, because they get the impulse. Somebody says, this is your schedule, and you have to teach these people. Many of them are there and tell themselves, I'm here. I'm here because I like to be here. I'm here because I want to feed my family. I'm here because I have something to do. That's great. We're not saying anything against any of those things, but we want to show that the man who gets the impulse to bring knowledge into the world from the Spirit is also conditioning the knowledge so that when those people that learn that technique, they follow the same path. And this is the hardest knowledge to acquire. This is the knowledge that allows you to overcome your torments of soul. And that's what enlightenment is all about. We have to feel that we break clean from the social world, from the time configuration. Because if you let time go by, you realize how dull things begin to look. How really dull and even to the point of silly or inconsequential. How many things have happened in the last 10 or 5 or 20 years that you can say really have meaning for you in a spiritual life sense? Not just a spiritual sense, but a spiritual life sense. Things that get you excited about personal things because things are going to elevate you, because they're going to elevate you because of your family or your status, they're all great things. No question about it. But now in relationship to those, you also have a soul that has a power in it to break free. And that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about surfing in a bathtub. We're talking about surfing when the wave is high. We're talking about when the power is there. If a man cuts off his connection to everything and then says, here, now I'm free, that's a lot different than what we're talking about. The man who is still connected, still responsible, but is free, finds that the Spirit is moving the soul in a way that makes that connection to the world. So one knows, here's the will of the Spirit acting. It's not just me being cut off in a isolated form from friends and family, but here the Spirit is giving me the gift of mastering myself in relationship to my world. And that's a big change in human beings. So when human beings feel that they can rely on a spiritual source in a free way. Now, we could think to ourselves, well, I want that to be a certain way because I want to satisfy people over here with something. I want to satisfy them because I want them to believe in me in a certain way. Well, that's one thing. But when we are given the beauty and purity of the Spirit, of spiritual revelation, then we can give it to others exactly in that form. So there's an enlightenment and illumination that needs to be there, to be present in us, that says, here I am affected, and here I have cleansed myself of this. I have had to prepare myself. I've had to do something to myself to make myself into a person that can receive this spiritual knowledge. So that means the intuition level, the level where you feel you're not just yourself going into nature, but you're going into nature with the whole of the consciousness of your folk, the whole of the consciousness of the people. Now, there is a very interesting thing about it. How much of this is related then to the everyday life of the people? Because your soul is going to say, this is the people, this is the true spirit of the people. It's going to show you that. It's going to say, here, these are the personal things. Well, we can't take that. That's something else. So we become a spokesperson for the ideal spirit of our folk when we go into these, when we walk into the worlds of the spirit of nature or the realm of nature with the spirit in us. And if you can feel that this is going to move you to cleanse yourself, to purify yourself, or to make a form of a judgment in yourself, an I that can present knowledge to the spirit, because you feel that the spirit is going to affect the world. It's going to do something. It's going to create a downpouring, a pressure that's going to move in people's souls. This is a very high level of sensitivity for you. So you feel you don't need to talk to your friends about certain principles. You talk to the spirit of the folk. And the folk spirit gives you a feeling that you have benefited the folk, the spirit of your people, because you have presented in a pure way to the spirit. In these states of consciousness, there then becomes a purpose and a meaning for us. And so it is another form of illumination in our age, an illuminating of the human soul that illumines not for the human being, but for the gods, for the spirits of nature to see. This human being is not so interested in just carrying all the complaints of every human being into the spirit, but is cautious and feels within themselves the respect and honor for the living spirit, so that that which is presented to the spirit is also justified, made in a form of a justice, a spiritual kind of justice, presentation of love, forgiveness, of wisdom. It takes a lot of work as a student of this path of spirituality. It takes a lot of work on yourself to get to that level where you feel you're ready. You try and you try and you try, and you must keep trying. You must keep purifying the soul of its anger, frustration, its irritations, because you know it's holding you back. You know all the way along the path of this that what holds every human being back is something in the personality, something that tears the pure fabric of the soul. And because it tears on that particular form of the fabric, you feel that it affects your creation of your soul that is a body in the spirit. It's a fact of our spiritual development that suddenly we realize that the physical body isn't the only body we have, but that we have a body that actually comes to us in our consciousness in a full form and says, this is what you've made of me. So that means you have secretly, in a hidden way, nature has veiled it from your eyes. And so I'm telling you now, as a teacher of this, to be warned of this, that all your thoughts that stream out of you, like a blood, like a flowing of water, actually flow to something that you probably are not yet aware of. As your consciousness grows, you suddenly or over time become aware that there is a greater, more substantial and real being of yourself than the self that lives upon the earth. In fact, it's an embarrassment. Spiritual researchers find this out often way too late. Why? Because it takes a lot of maturity of spiritual work to be able to relate this fact. But the fact is still there, my friends. And that is, over time, one begins to realize that what has flowed from the soul is a substance that grows and is the vital force of another being in the spirit. And by knowing this, then we begin to understand the veil between man and the spirit lifts itself away, and we begin to understand the whole purpose of our physical life, which was to give that substance to the spiritual body. It is this that the human being becomes. It is this that the human being has worked and strove all of his life upon the earth. Over this we ponder. Over this we wonder. And then we come to conclusions of it. And we meet with it. And we begin to talk with it. And we begin to invite it to be close to us in our meditations. And this is a difficult thing in one sense, because of the nature of the human being, the nature of the soul, nature of ourself, to feel how something can be so powerfully made in the spirit. And so it humbles us. And soon enough, over time, the soul has the power to become. And it feels the will within it, the stirring of the will. It says, see, you can do it. You can flow out of you, not just for the world around you, not just for that world that is passing away and will never be perfect. The earthly world is not actually for the flowing energy of the human. What is the purpose of the human life becomes very clear at a certain point. And that is when you begin to see that there is a spiritual form of yourself that will survive, that survives you, that lives much more steady through your life experiences. Things happen, they go away, they come, they go. Love creates many things, then they come, then they go. Death and illness, people change. And in regards to this particular being that we're talking about has the power to ray back into us, to shine back into us at certain moments, and then come to us to heal and comfort, to rebuild ourselves, to give us something that we've been feeding to it all along. So it's a great moment that I speak to you about. And this is part of what enlightenment in our age is all about. To become enlightened that it's not just the earthly man that's important. It's not just the man on the earth itself, but that there is an ongoing power in the spirit that is very steady and is waiting for our attention, is actually waiting for us to pay attention to it and to work our way over to it and say to it, how amazing that you are there as a living form. And we can follow this being if this being has received from us maturity. So we have to give our earthly self maturity. Because these two beings, these two forms of ourselves, actually reflect each other. It's important to realize that that form in the spirit, that form that feeds off of us, also needs from us, is dependent on us. And what it needs most is courage. It needs our virtue. It needs our will to overcome. Why? Because it is the brooding of the spiritual self, the brooding, depressive nature of our spiritual self that attaches to the depressive form upon the earth. They begin to echo each other. To change that takes courage in the earthly self. It takes the feeling of mastery, and that means the soul needs to absorb knowledge, self-knowledge. The soul needs to feel within itself the incentive that it can overcome. Even if it can't overcome in an earthly life, it can feel that it can overcome in a spiritual form of its life. That it's not set back in its soul nature. But the soul nature is stronger and raised back into the spirit. Even if the physical body can't hold itself up against this, there is then this other form of the physical nature. And this other form of our physical nature is very, very, very important. Many have contemplated the meaning of resurrection. They've contemplated the meaning of what it is that passes beyond the grave. Many talk about the soul and in a theoretical way about it. But what is true about our spiritual life and our spiritual being has to be said here. And that is that same power that gives you or anyone an eye to see across the ages of time, to feel what it's like to see as a Roman or a man of the Hebrew culture or of India, of ancient India, or of ancient Africa, or of ancient South America. The feeling that the soul can penetrate into these faraway periods of time only shows that the soul is of an ancient nature. That's what it means. It's not just the imagination running off. It's because the creation of the soul just needs to have our attention, our consciousness. Just like when we want to make dinner, we take the ingredients that are waiting for us to apply to them, the heat and the water and the mixture and the mixing of them, and then we have our dinner. And so it is that the soul waits for us to create from the elements. So the elements of the world are dormant. Time is dormant. The soul has the power to awaken them. So when a human being is lived, he's adding to himself for the future something in the future that's going to look back upon this time and feel and sense what was. Does that make sense now? So just as when you took yourself into the spirit, to the spirit of nature, and you went through a process of purifying your thoughts of your soul, and then the culture, then your folk spirit, and you said, I can't take these soundings of my folk, my people, I can't take those to the spirit. I have to leave them on the earth. All the complaints, the depressions, and all the silly things that people are involved with on a day-to-day basis. This you would never take into the spirit, to the spirit that you meet. And so it is that you leave that behind, and you meet the folk spirit, and you, in a purified form of your consciousness, can represent, even so, you can represent the people. You can represent your people, because there's something in the folk spirit that says to you, tell me, I want to know, I need to know this. Or you feel that you can give it. You feel that you can pour your soul out to a listening spiritual being. And then something occurs between you and the being, and you feel that the earth now will be purified or changed in a certain way. And so now when we come to the same with our own death, when we come to the same with our own processes of understanding our own person, we realize, yes, it is so true. We don't want to take all of these personal things. There is a very, very certain or beautiful way to bring our soul into the spirit. And there's a way that we don't want to bring the soul into the spirit. To know the difference between the two is very important, you can imagine. If you're a person that loves everything about yourself, then it's going to be something of a difficulty when you want to look back upon your life here from another life. You must think to yourself, what is longing? You must think to yourself, what is sorrow for not having that? And to purify that so that you have a desire, you can make a desire to unfold that form of the spirit of yourself for yourself in the future or for others in the future. But at the same time, not to be seductive. And so it is that the beauty, the crafting of that spiritual nature so that it diminishes is just as important as the spiritual nature that unfolds. So that which is folded up has to be folded up correctly. Just like when we make our beds, we make them in a perfect way. We don't just leave it. And so when we work with the soul in this way, it's because of our insights and our faith. These are incredibly important. Now look at what I did with the word faith. It's not just a vague faith. It's a faith in your being nature. One of the most important things in our spiritual knowledge, the most important thing is not the things out there. It's not the things that we expect other people to have or do. it's the things that bring us insight and say, now I can see myself. Now I can see what I need to do for myself. And now I can get to work. We want to have model or exemplary people in front of us. Of course we do. We want them to be in the highest positions. But like I was telling you earlier in this lecture, it was that the whole of the Renaissance began in a very obscure place, in Naples or Florence, a very obscure place of the school of the Camerata, and it moved around. It was a simple development, not a lot of people, but it was a spirit that took hold of the soul, and it gave the feeling, the incentive of something new. It breathed into the people that came to the knowledge, this is something really beautifully new, and I want to participate in it. It was the knowledge of the Greeks, the books of the Greeks that were suddenly translated because of discoveries in the libraries of Spain. And these libraries became available, and certain people translated the books very slowly and gradually, and suddenly there was the seeds for enlightenment. What were these seeds about? The seeds were about the very things that we've been studying. It's to see into the soul and say, this is something from the past, and whose past is it? It was yours. Now you're not there anymore. You're here. So your I consciousness can't be here and there. You feel yourself to be here, and you can't say, I am there yet. But when you begin to have spiritual understanding as we're presenting it to you, you will be able to understand how your I, the forming of your I consciousness, which says, I am here, blocks out your understanding of an I consciousness in any age. You can't feel you're an I as a Greek, or you can't feel you're an I with the I consciousness that a man has today as an Egyptian. So you must see how in those ages, they were preparing for the man you are today, or the woman. They had a knowledge of it. They said, if we do this today, just like I'm giving you an instruction, how to make yourself for the future. The future man is going to look back on this man of today, and he's going to say, there, in the 21st century, I felt as an I. I no longer feel as an I. But there, if I want to feel the substance of being an I, then I go to this age. But if I want to feel as if I'm part of the culture in a certain sense, then I'm going to feel as a Greek. Or I'm going to feel as an Indian. When we say India, we can also mean Africa, because Africa and India and the southeast of Asia, they were all one culture at one time. You can see also this in many of the rituals and teachings. You have, for instance, karate in Africa, a certain form of it, and you have a karate in South America. How these traveled across the southern hemisphere continents is quite a mystery still. People wonder about that. And these had to flow along spiritual ways, because the students that learned them learned it as an esoteric art, something that came through the yogis, something that came through the teachers in the Himalaya Mountains, the Chinese. It's an amazing thing to realize that the Indians began this, and this Indian culture was also part of Africa, and that also transferred over to South America. And we can find this because of the configurations, because of the arts left behind. These are beautiful things to discover for our understanding of culture and how it works. But when we begin to see how the spirit through the ages is making a demand upon us, because this is natural in the higher sense of all the ages of the earth. You can imagine now that you have gone all the way up and above and beyond the culture itself of a great age or a number of ages, and then you see that there is a spiritual descending of knowledge, an eye-conscious knowledge that is really higher above all the knowledge that we know. And we can partake in this, and we can feel that we can rest in it in a glorious way, that a human being isn't going to be lost, but that like a seed in a pomegranate or a seed that's inside of a body, a pod, that the human soul is also part of a design of a spiritual being. It's part of a living form of a spiritual being. And so the whole of the forming of each soul, your soul, my soul, all of our souls, is part of a great and enormous spiritual emanation, a body of life. Human beings in this age, in our 21st century, and we come back to this age, are in the most isolated form, the coldest form, the most isolated from each other in the coldest way. And the people feel this is normal. This is quite normal. But this is not normal. This is normal for our age. It's normal for our time. But it's not normal in the sense of the other forms of the spirit, the other forms of ourself in the other ages, both in the future and in the past. To discover the reason why you're the way you are today is to discover also at the same time where the incentive, the spark, the feeling that I've been driven to my aloneness and now I want to go back. I want to find my way back. And so this is like the prodigal son. You read about it in the gospel, one of the greatest stories there that has ever been told, because it is for us so real. Every soul has to migrate back to the mother place, the place where the family of humanity is now understood as a father, as a king and a queen and a mother and a family that all have generated from in a joyful way. And that's why we're actually able to justify our leaving the cacophony of the folk behind as we open the first doors of the spirit to come to the folk soul and say, I have to rise above this world in order to be balanced. I have to leave this world behind. My wisdom has only showed me the pain and suffering that everybody is going to come to. This is how the soul feels in its isolated form. It contemplates and then it comes to the same conclusion. All life, all the life on earth is just one big frustrating work. And this work all leads to the same goal, dashed to pieces, as you might say, all crushed by some form of illness or sorrow or some disappointment. And if you have a lot of knowledge, you can say, What is the use of all of life? And so when you open the doors to the Spirit, when you have the incentive to say, I've had enough of this, I've got to find another way, and then the soul begins to sense something greater than itself, something greater than its own age. And it has to feed and resuscitate itself, your own being. It has to feed and resuscitate itself with courage and wisdom in order to see this being, because this being of the eternal self is crippled by what we have fed it all of our life. It wants to act in sort of like a mirror. It says, if you're so sad about being on the earth, then I'm going to be so sad about you being on the earth. And we begin to realize this is kind of an echo thing. And we know we can change our attitude. We don't exactly know why, but we take upon ourselves the Spirit. And we say, okay, I'm going to go for the Spirit now. Don't know exactly why we do this, other than that it feels to be the right direction. It begins to make us feel lighter, healthy again, rejuvenated and restored. What is that all about? These are the big questions, aren't they? Why? You feel that you should be crushed and dashed to pieces, be buried in a grave and forgotten. If you could only do it, but you know you can't. Something says to you, no, you can't. You're going to suffer because of consciousness. Consciousness has brought you suffering, and because you want consciousness, you're going to suffer. Well, this isn't really the full truth of it, is it? But that's how we feel about it. And we can't overcome that. And in this echo of it, when we're sick, so sick that we have to change, we begin to see, we begin to realize this is really our enlightenment, isn't it? And so a new age of enlightenment here is growing right in the middle, right in this age of industrialization. The age when everything's, all the problems should have been taken care of, but they weren't. And all the problems were multiplied instead of diminished. That's the fact. That's the facts of life, my friends. All of the conveniences made it even worse. People became more discomforted because now they don't know what to do with themselves. They're discomforted because there's too much leisure. The leisure life that people lead has given them the opportunity for corruption. And because of the corruption, they take an extra stride in the wrong place into the corrupting and ruin the soul, into the corruptions and ruin the soul. Because of this, the soul knows, if I had only taken another path. But then it begins to feel also in the spirit. If only I'll just walk on that spiritual path and I'll keep on it and I'll keep on it. Something's going to happen to me. And sure enough, it does. The body responds very quickly. Why? Because something descends out of the spirit. A feeling, a water, a fire, thoughts. We rise out of our misery. We're like the man who's crippled, and we just hear the voice of Jesus saying, pick up your bed and walk. And you think, that's not such a bad idea. I'm going to try it. And you do. And you pick up your bed, and you are walking. And you say, I was crippled before. Now I'm not. What happened? You don't know. Now this is in the spirit, my friends. Why? Because it's the spiritual being that we crippled. It's the spiritual being of us that Jesus was talking about, not the physical being on earth. That doesn't do us any good. When we hear that story, we say, well, even if we walk and we see what happens when people get cured and they go from being a cripple to somebody who can walk, well, that doesn't do anything for their soul, does it? So a spiritual teacher like Jesus really didn't do anything for anyone by letting them walk. And so it is that we begin to doubt Christianity because of that. We begin to doubt what it means, what its message is, because it's not about the physical. It's about the soul. The spiritual teacher says, I wouldn't mind dying, but my soul has to be right. And so I do mind. I want to get up and walk, and I want to walk into that spiritual world. And then I can leave this world behind. That's what's true about the soul. I want to walk into that spiritual world. I don't want to die into the spiritual world like that. I don't want to go there as a cripple. I don't want to go there with a disease. I want to go there as a whole man. Do you see that now? Do you see the profound aspect of the gospel that really is veiled in the gospel? The greatest, most profound miracle in the gospel is when Jesus comes to the man in his tomb. We think he rose him from the dead. We don't understand that we have to see he rose the man from the dead to go into the spirit and become a powerful spiritual being. That's more important, my friends. That spirit is in you now. The death that we're talking about is already in you. The corruption is already in you. The grave is already there. Because without spirit, a man is dead. A man alone and isolated is a dead man. You know this. You need to know that that is a blessed experience. Because you're going to wait for the angel to come to you. And in the angel coming, and you feel it, and you say, this is my time, and it has come. Now you understand again why the world is so full of corruption today. And why the path out of it is so difficult. Because the choice is while we're alive. The dying is not in the dying. It's the dying that we know in the soul is occurring. When we no longer feel how important it is to feed our spirit. Ancient man felt that he was immortal. He didn't feel his mortal self in the same way as a modern man does. So the illumination of the soul, the illumination of the spirit form of the soul, brings about a new form of enlightenment for us. Now when you walk into the earth, now when you walk and do things in the earth, after feeling and understanding this and going through this, even just with this one lecture, you can get enough to feel, yes, this is enough for me to understand what is my life about and what I want to do. And so that spiritual power is connected to living aspects, living views that we get, living experiences of spiritual things. That other world that we're talking about is not a fantasy. That other world that we're talking about is more real than that which is considered to be the real world. And why? Because it's going to persist. It's not going to go away. And it will dominate and take over our consciousness. And not in an corrupting or evil way, not in a morbid way, not in a fantastic way, not in a way that we can say hurts us and harms us. It's the opposite. It's a way that builds us, builds your character. And then you're going to see the character that's raying back at me out of the spirit is now stronger than me. Why? Because it grows from our consciousness of the day and the consciousness of the night. It grows in two places. Whereas the day consciousness is a little slower. It's a tick behind. It's one tick behind. And that's because of the night. So for you, my friends, that want to know the secret of this, that's what it is. The spirit of us has the day and the night. And because of that contrast, you become subservient, a servant of the very being that you're growing out of your own self. And you realize that is the Lord forming it. The Lord of the world, the Lord of the spirit, the lords of nature are there to participate in that creation of yourself, connected to you, connected to your own vitality and your destiny in the future and in the present. It is from this spirit that comes the age. It is from this spiritual emanation that comes the culture, raised back down into the earth in a beautifully forming, inspiring way, the art, the strength and the courage to live upon the earth with this living spirit guiding. Thank you tonight for listening to our last concluding lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination. I hope I've given you enough material now for you to continue on your path and your growth to achieve that enlightenment and illumination as a disciple of the spirit of the world, or the spirits of the elemental worlds, the spirit that fills the earth with the glory of the gods.